2015 has ended. 2016 is just beginning. And so I've been wondering, well, how to begin this year and how to kind of close out from last year. And as the last few months, we've been looking a lot at the life of the Apostle Paul. Looked at how did he begin and end his letters? And it's the same with each one. He begins by saying grace, by speaking a blessing of grace over the people. And he ends the letters the same way. Even this church he'd planted in Ephesus, when he's going to be leaving them in Acts chapter 20, verse 32, he's speaking to the elders of the church saying, I'm leaving. You're not going to see me again. Now I commit you to God and to the word of his grace, which can build you up and give you an inheritance among all those who are sanctified. So for Paul, grace was an important topic.
Why? I would say there's two reasons. One of those reasons is because of who the people were. When he would start with grace to you and peace from God, he was using something that came from both cultures he was writing to, because he had these Hebrews. This is where the gospel had started. Jesus was a Hebrew. He was Jewish. And so it starts in Jerusalem, and many of these people are ethnically Jewish. But then as the church is growing, it's going to more and more people who don't have that ethnic background. And so how does he reach both of them? And a classic sort of Greek greeting sounded similar to grace to you. And the classic Hebrew greeting was shalom, or peace. And so he put those together. As Al Chi said, what many people don't realize is that Paul coined a new phrase, that the grace to you was from the Greek and that peace was from the Hebrew. And so he combined a Greek greeting and a Hebrew greeting to create a uniquely Christian greeting. And so Paul would use that greeting every time to everyone. If he wrote to a big group of people, he starts with grace to you, ends with grace to you. If he's writing to just one guy who's a close friend, he starts with grace to you, and he ends with grace to you. If he's writing to people that he's rejoicing in and encouraging to stand strong in persecution, same thing, grace to you. Grace to you. If he's writing to people he's frustrated with and saying, why aren't you getting this? Grace to you. Grace to you. Every time he's writing about grace and saying that's to you. But so he's trying to reach his audience. But I'd say the second reason why he talks about grace so much is because he's talking about himself. Paul wrote this, by the grace of God, I am what I am. Grace is what defined him. If it had not been God's grace, he wouldn't be what he was. So he says, I know what grace has done in my life. Paul, who would write, I am the worst of sinners. I was someone who thought I was following God, and by doing it, I was actually persecuting him. When he was on the road leading to Damascus, Jesus shows up to him and says, why are you persecuting me? Who are you? I didn't realize I was doing that. He had so long lived in ignorance and said, I wasted a lot of my life and I put to death people that now I would rather still be alive so they can tell of God's goodness. I screwed up majorly. But now, God's grace has made me what I am. God's grace has changed me. Kind of what is grace? Grace is one of those words. I grew up going to church often, and it's one of those words that seems like it's kind of interchangeable with other ones, right? I like to sing songs. I like to write songs. And grace is one of those words that, do you have a song where you want to talk about God's face or his embrace or the human race or a holy place? Grace. Great. And if it ends with eternally, or you and me, or controversy, then you use mercy instead. It's kind of whatever rhymes best in the song. Have you ever had that feeling of like grace is kind of like grace, mercy? We just mix them together. It's sort of like the fruit of the Spirit. You start with love and joy, and then it kind of gets muddied in there. Like, what's really the difference between kindness and goodness and gentleness and patience? I mean, that's kind of part of kindness, and it all kind of blurs together. And yes, grace somewhat does that, but grace was important enough to Paul that he would use specifically that word, that there was something about grace that was so special. So let's look at two ways that grace has somewhat been explained to me, that as grace is, it's a gift, it's God's special favor, but there's this acrostic that works in English for the words grace, where we're told it's God's riches at Christ's expense. It's what God alone could give, and he gave it through what Jesus has done. Jesus, who it was in very nature God, the image of the invisible God who came down to earth, who lived in front of us and showed us what God was like, who taught us what God was like, but then through his sacrifice, his death on the cross, and then his resurrection, he has restored us to God and given us not just salvation, not just the restoration of relationship, but all of the riches that come with it. Grace was God's riches at Christ's expense. Or for the words grace and mercy, I've heard, well, the way to kind of tell the difference between those is grace is getting what you don't deserve, and mercy is not getting what you do deserve. So if you're in jail, you're going to be put to death, and then the judge says, I'll let you go. Well, that's mercy. You do deserve to die, but you received mercy. But grace is like, you don't deserve anything, and then your friend gives you €1 million. Oh, he's been gracious to you. He's shown you grace. And those definitions can help us to an extent. But I want to look at some of the things that grace does. Some of the things that we're told grace is for us. Grace, God gives us grace. And when Paul is speaking and says grace to you, he's not saying it's my grace. He's saying it's grace from God, grace from our Lord Jesus Christ. And that grace first is for salvation. We're told it's by grace you have been saved through faith. This not from yourselves, not by your own works. So no one can boast. No one can say, oh, I saved myself. No, it's the gift of God. Grace, we receive salvation. That being free from sin, being free from all the things that had bound us before, God now giving us protection, God delivering us and watching over us. It starts with what God alone can do and what he did through Jesus. That's where grace begins, but grace doesn't stop there. Grace is a gift, but it's not like one of those gifts where at Christmas someone gives you a nice little ornament that you hang there and, oh, that grace is pretty. And then I put it away in a box until the next year. And then I pull it out around Christmas. Grace, oh, that's nice. It's not that kind of a gift. Grace is like being given a car or given something for you to use. If you're given that and then you just don't do anything with it, the person who gave you the gift will be like, what's up? Why aren't you driving the car? Why aren't you using the gift I have given to you? And grace is like that. Grace is a gift that's not just a one-time thing that we receive, but we should continue in it. It's not just a passive one, but we use grace. As we saw in 1 Corinthians 15, when Paul said, God's grace has made me what I am, he continues to say, and that grace was not without effect. That grace was not wasted. That grace was not useless. God's grace has made me what I am and has continued to be put to use. How so? Well, grace for salvation, but grace teaches us. We're told in Titus that grace teaches us to say no to ungodliness, but to live upright, self-controlled, godly lives in this present generation, right now. Not waiting for heaven to when we'll be made perfect then, but that it says grace teaches us and trains us and makes us able to live this life like God did, to live like Jesus did, to live in that kind of love and that kind of joy and that kind of peace. And so may God's grace be upon you to live like he's called us to. Sometimes people are worried, oh, well, we abuse the grace of God or misuse the grace of God. if we just receive forgiveness and then don't continue in it. In a way, that's true, but I don't even know if you can truly misuse grace if you're living in the sort of way that isn't continuing to be trained, then you're just not living in grace. That's not the grace that God gives. The grace God gives forgives and changes, forgives and trains, forgives and heals. Doesn't just say, now run off and do whatever you like. But it teaches us how to follow him. It teaches us how to be self-controlled. We need continued grace. Because grace, it saves us. Grace, it teaches us. Grace enables us as well. We're told that we have different gifts. In Romans, we're told about it. In 1 Corinthians, we're told about it. In Ephesians, we're told about it. All of these were Paul writing. It says we have different gifts according to the grace that was given to each of us. God's grace gave us gifts. It wasn't just salvation, but it gave us the ability to do something. Some of those gifts that we're told about are things that seem big and spiritual, like prophecy and speaking in tongues. And some of those are things like serving and contributing to the needs of others. Some of that is leading and doing that diligently. He says that when Jesus rose on high and he gave gifts to men, then it says that he created some people to be apostles, those that are sent out, and some to be prophets, and some to be pastors, and some to be teachers, and some to be evangelists for a purpose, that we all might grow up together, so that we all might become unified in faith and knowledge of Jesus Christ. I love looking around this room and seeing the various ages, the various nationalities, seeing what grace is doing in people's lives. I love hearing the stories people share, the God stories we have here, seeing what grace is doing, how it is enabling us, how it's making us capable to walk out what God has done. He didn't just teach us and say, well, here you go, you have to go figure it out yourself. No, he said, I'll teach you how to do it, and I'll give you the strength to do it as well. And so we need continued grace. We don't just trust in ourselves. And just as grace is against laziness, sort of like I said, grace teaches us to say no to ungodly things, to say yes to it. And so a laziness that says, I'll just take grace and sit here and not let my life be changed. Grace is against laziness, but it's also against law. It is also against self-righteousness. Grace teaches us to be self-controlled, but not self-righteous. And so people who try to say, I've received the grace of God, and then have this face that never shows joy or are always judging other people and pointing at that, that's also missing the point of what grace does. We live a life that's by faith from first to last, and just as much as I needed Jesus to save me from my sins, I need Jesus and his Holy Spirit to continue to help me to live this life he's called me to. It wasn't like, oh, I'll put you straight and then you go do it on your own. Grace enables us and it continues to give us that power to live and to walk according to it for a purpose, and it's not just for ourselves. That's one of the cool things about grace. God gives you grace not just for you. God gives you grace so that you can use those gifts to serve other people. Every time we're told about these spiritual gifts, these gifts from God, it's so that you can use them to bless other people. You can look at the person on your right. You can look at the person on your left. And you can pray, God, give me grace to bless them. And God, give them grace to be a blessing to me. Because grace is meant for everyone and is meant for us to use it in a larger setting. So grace saves us, grace teaches us, grace enables us, and grace sends us. Paul writes about being made an apostle, which the idea of an apostle is it's someone who's sent out, a messenger who's sent. He says, from the womb I was chosen by God's grace to go be this messenger, to be this sent one. Grace sends us out. It doesn't just have you sit in the same spot, but it calls us towards action, towards movement. And it's interesting that we see that word used in the book of Acts when Paul and Barnabas are sent out on their first trip. We're told that the church commended them to God's grace to send them out. And then when they came back, they shared about that mission. And then a little while later, Paul and Silas are going out, and we're told again, and the church commended them to God's grace. Why? Because they would need God's grace to teach them so they can teach others. They would need God's grace to enable them so they can do the work. All of these things we've seen, that's what grace is a part of. I wish I could make grace sound as good as it is, but I just don't have enough words for it. I don't know how to get it across how precious the grace of God is. And I don't want it to lose meaning for me or for others. Since I was, I think, a teenager, I've been signing many of my emails, Grace and Peace, taking off of what Paul wrote. And many of you, if you've received an email from me, likely you've seen that often. But it becomes just so natural to just write, oh, grace and peace, and then go on. And I don't want to stop realizing how precious God's grace has been in my life. As we were standing around to pray in pre-service prayer before this, there's the little box that the kids are going to use to show them kind of how you pray. And so there's adoration and confession and thanksgiving and supplication. That these are things that you do in prayer. You adore and you confess. And so I asked if the people who had been praying, oh, have you used that? And one of them said, well, I don't know if we really did confession, but Matthew, you can start. And a quote from a man of God many years ago came to my mind. I am a great sinner, and Christ is a great Savior. Why? Because of grace. He is a great Savior because by His grace, He can forgive all the stuff I've done. As you think back over 2015, maybe it wouldn't be hard for you to come up with things you're not proud of, things that you would regret. I certainly can. May sound strange to say, and I know that sometimes not coming from a grace mentality, but simply looking at my own work, I think I was a better person in 2014 than I was in 2015. And if I'll stop and watch God's grace, then I won't look at my own efforts, and I'll see that even the guy that I can be on some days, when I'm not at my best, God's grace has forgiven, has saved, but will teach me how to live differently, will give me the strength to do it, and will send me out to bless others. So grace calls us to go. And for those, if you've been wondering, it's been nice. I've had several people ask me this year or ask me at the end of 2015, so what's kind of our theme for 2016? In 2014, we were looking at Jesus and the Jesus lifestyle and having that challenge. In 2015, it was praying together and serving together. And so I was surprised. And people said, like, oh, so what's 2016? And here's the word, go. Or at least that's where we're starting, is I feel God has just said, go. First, we learn the things that Jesus has commanded us. When we spent a year just looking at what Jesus did, this is what Jesus taught us, the things Jesus commanded. So we start making ourselves disciples, which is praying together and serving together. And now we get to, so go into all the world and make that happen. And that will include things like going on mission trips, yes, going outside of Maastricht. But that very much includes little choices in your daily life to go across the room and talk to that person at work, to go up to that other student and serve them, to go to someone who you know is lonely and bring them a meal. Sometimes it's those little goes that are so important that we miss out on doing. And so this year, may we be a people who go, that we have a going lifestyle. This year, may you be defined by grace. As Paul said, by God's grace, I am what I am. And so may grace be what you see as who you are, that you would not define yourself by your regrets, as many people do. That you would not define yourself by the pain that you've caused yourself, or maybe the pain that someone else caused you. On the flip side, don't be defined by your occupation and all the work that you think you can do. Don't be defined by your accomplishments. Be defined by God's grace. Paul, who had all of those things, he could say, this is all the junk I did in my past, but that's not who I am. He'd say, these are all the churches that I've started, all the spiritual work I've done, but that's also not who I am. By God's grace, I am who I am. So why a blessing of grace, and why is that my hope for you? Because grace will be what God alone can give to make us who God alone can make us, to bless others, which will glorify Him. See, this all leads back to God. Paul wanted salvation made known to all people. He wanted unity in the church, but both of those because he wanted glory given to God. And so another part of the word grace and another way that the word grace is used in the Bible has to do with thanksgiving. In Strong's Concordance, it includes this idea that it's especially the divine influence upon the heart and its reflection in the life, including gratitude. See, many times Paul uses that word grace, not just for the grace that God has given us, but he says, grace be unto God. In most translations, it says, thanks be unto God. Thanks be unto Jesus. But it's that same word of grace, that God's grace turns around back toward him. God's grace turns us with thankful and grateful hearts and says, grace to God who has given us so much grace. May thanks and grace be given unto him. And so Paul wrote, as 2 Corinthians says, as God's grace reaches more and more people, there's going to be great thanksgiving. And God will receive more and more glory. Do you want to see that happen in Maastricht? God's grace reaches more and more people, so that there's great thanksgiving, so that God receives more and more glory. I would love to see this church triple, quadruple, and keep growing, because I've seen what grace has done in people's lives. I've heard it. You all can share stories of it. I've seen people who walked in here that felt very lonely and pained, and God's grace has changed them into being part of a family. And I'm thankful for that. And I'm not ashamed of that. And I'm not ashamed if other people would come in here and do the same thing. I've seen people who have been very doubting and worrying and always wondering, does God really love me or not? I've seen people be very unsure of themselves. And then find God's grace, know that God has given them strength, and that changed them into being people who are full of joy. And I'm not ashamed of that. And I hope that that happens for more and more people. As Paul said, I am not ashamed of the gospel. I'm not ashamed of that good news because it's good news. Because it helps to change someone's life for the better. That doesn't mean it changes all of your circumstances to be nice and rosy and easy, but it will change your life. And it will be what God alone can do to make you the person God alone meant for you to be. And so today, I want us to give thanks to God. And a way that we do that is through celebrating the Lord's Supper. In many churches, you hear the term Eucharist. And in that word for the Lord's Supper, Eucharist, is charis, which is that Greek word for grace that we've been looking at this whole time, that grace is involved in this action. Thanksgiving is involved in it. Eucharist just means the great Thanksgiving. And that's what we do here at this table. We have bread and we have juice, and these are symbols of Christ's body, the way that he was sacrificed and died for us. And it's symbols of his blood as it was shed for us. And we're grateful for it. I am. But it's for the body. It's for us as a group. It's not just about you as an individual. I don't know if you've ever had a me party where it's just you by yourself. And those can be okay, but it's much more fun to have a party where there's more people involved. Those of you who like me parties, I've seen your Facebook this year, and you still like posting accomplishments on Facebook because something about joy wants to get shared. And social media has allowed even people who don't like standing in front of a group to be able to share that joy in a large audience. It just does. And this, what Christ has done, deserves to be shared. And in our joy, we share it.